Jake?
I don't have a husband this morning yet. He'll be here at some point. I guess we're waiting for a certain answer.
Oh, we got a class this morning.
Cool.
By the way, for those of you who weren't here when I was saying it a few minutes ago, that outfit that Xander has on, again, is one of the outfits that I wore when I was his size. So, one of the ones that we hang on, that Mom hung on to for 30 years. So, who cares what the style is? I mean, it's just fun that he's wearing my clothes. So, I'm having a lot of fun with
it. Get used to it. It happens quite a bit.
But wearing my clothes?
That still happens to me. So.
Get used to it. So.
Anywhere there. Once a year,
I want to tell you guys this morning, as we're getting started, that how much I am enjoying teaching this class and kind of, I guess, leading the discussion that we're having. I really appreciate everybody's comments that we're making, and I sincerely have enjoyed doing this. I'm enjoying learning about how to teach a class, because this is, again, my first time to do it, and preparing for the class, and so thank you all for your support and for coming to class. So, just hope that we're learning. Hopefully this is worth your time to be here, and hopefully some of the things that we're saying we can apply in our lives. Morning, JJ. So, this morning, okay, so last week we didn't get all the way through the lesson. We had really good comments, and that is great. I never want to discourage that. But we didn't get all the way through, so if you have the outline from last week, we're going to be talking about some of those things that we didn't finish up last week, but then also this week we're going to... Does everybody have one from last week? It's okay. Yeah, all right. But we're going to be kind of going back and forth between that one and then the one that I passed out for today. So, anyway, I'll let you know as we're going back and forth. The first part of class this morning, I want to, if we can do this briefly, if there's any way to do this kind of like quickly, I'd like to go through and just recap a couple of the things that we talked about last week as far as the scriptures that we pointed out about death, and just to see... Just to make sure that we're on the same page, that we all agree with what these scriptures are telling us. I want to point out, again, Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 7 that we talked about last week says, "The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave of the lender." I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page as far as, do we all agree with that? Do we all understand that? Or is this, was that something that was that just applied to Solomon's time? When Solomon was writing these things, is it just applied to him and his time, or is that something that still applies for us in our time today? About the borrower being slave of the lender. Now, we talked about last week, and Rich brought up the point. Wherever Rich went, Rich brought up the point that for them, it meant something even more about being the slave of the lender. If they weren't able to pay the debt to the person that they owed it to, they actually became the servant of that person. For us today, obviously, we don't become the servant. We don't become that person's servant. So that part might not necessarily...
Don't we?
Well, not physically.
If we're working to make them money...
Yeah, that's definitely...
I mean, in context, we still are. Yeah. We're putting out effort that we get no benefit.
But you don't have to go to that person's house who's lending you the money and be their slave. I understand where you're coming from. But, I mean, that's the... So that part of it might be a little different now than it was then. But the whole concept, like Rich is talking about...
Might change our attitude if we had to.
True. The whole concept of becoming a slave, and we just mentioned as we were talking about this last week about what our debt is doing to us as opposed to what our debt is doing for us. We know that if we go buy something on with credit, then it can do things for us as far as we buy this new car and we buy it on debt and we know what the car is doing for us. We know what the washer and dryer is or whatever it is we buy. We know what those things are doing for us. But if we buy it on debt, if we buy it on credit, what is that doing to us? And we ask the questions, you know, how would our lives be different if we didn't have debt? If what would we be doing different in our family lives? What things can we do different with our families? What things could we do to serve God? How would our relationships with our families be different? Would there be less stress and tension and these kind of things in our families if we didn't have debt? And this is what being a slave, I think that's what it is. It's changing our lives. We're not able to live the lives that we want or the lives that God would maybe have us to live because of the debt that we're in. We're having to meet our financial obligations. So that concept, does that still apply to us today? Are we all in agreement that about this verse, about how the borrower is a servant or a slave to the lender? Does everybody give me some feedback? Yes? Yes, no? I mean, do we see that? Okay, I just want to make sure we're all digesting this the same way, you know, because I feel like the best way to apply it in our lives is to make it your own. I don't want to be this to be something that I'm just up here saying. You know, we need to accept it, you know, and digest it individually. And that way we can apply it better in our lives. So that brings us back to the question that we asked last week is, how can we be fully free to serve God if we are spending so much of our time and our effort serving our creditors, serving human creditors, I think I put it last week. So, okay, that's Proverbs 22:7. I'm going to try to go quicker through these next couple. We looked at Proverbs 28 last week, and we were talking about how God told the nation of Israel. He said in verse 1 of chapter 28 of Deuteronomy, he said, "If you do all these things that I command you, and you obey what I say, then I will bless you." And he goes through for the next 13, 14 verses saying all these things he's going to do in order to bless them as a nation if they follow the commands. Verse 15, he goes on to say, if you do not follow my commands and do what I ask you to do, then all of these curses will be on you. And he says, he calls them curses. And he goes down for like 40 more verses saying this curse, this curse, this curse, this curse, this curse. All this will come upon you if you do not follow what I command. And verses 43 and 44, he says, people will come, and you will have to borrow from them. You will be the borrower. They will be the leader, the lender. That you will be the tail. They will be the head, is what it says, 43 and 44. You know, this whole idea of the borrower being lesser than, slave to, the tail, the lender being the head, in charge, that whole idea again. But he calls being a borrower a curse. And I think it's very plain to see that. That's what God calls it. And it's a curse as opposed to what? What's the opposite of a curse? A blessing. Right? You know, we put it in today's terms, we think, well, I'm going to go, it'd be really good if I had this new blank. You fill in the blank. If I had this new blank, whatever it is you want, it would be really nice for me to have that in my life. And it might be. Having that item might be a good thing to have in your life. But God says, if you're going to borrow money to get it, that's a curse. It's not a blessing. Borrowing money is not a blessing. It's a curse. That's what God says. Do y'all see that from Deuteronomy chapter 28.
So what does he call the lender?
He calls them the head. He calls the lender.
But the borrower is the curse. What will that make the lender?
In charge. The master.
Could it not be a blessing for the lender if it wasn't for the curse?
Could it be a blessing for the lender?
Because he's in business to make the money. Without God giving him the authority to do that, it couldn't be that.
Yeah, he also, we covered a couple other versions, but he gave them some certain criteria too. He said, at the end of a certain length of time, you forgive that debt.
That's true.
Yeah.
At the end of a certain time, you let that person free.
And also,
because they had certain responsibilities too. If they didn't do those things, then they would be free. So they weren't free to just do whatever they want.
In the old law, if we were all Israelites in here, if we were all of the nation of God in here, if I was the lender, I was not allowed to charge you interest on that. You didn't charge your own brother interest. If there was a foreigner, you could charge them interest, but your own people, you were not to do that. So, I mean, anyway, they were just supposed to. You're supposed to lend it, and they repay you what you know what they owe. But that leads into the next thing, is as far as what Rich was talking about, and also in Deuteronomy, a few chapters earlier, chapter 15. Verses 1 through 6, we talked about last week about the sabbatical year, the Sabbath year. You know, every seventh year, they were supposed to, verses 1 through 6 says, you, all the debts between brothers are to be forgiven. If any one of your brothers owes you after that seventh year, you are to release them from the debt. If there is a foreigner, you can still collect the debt. But if it's a brother, you release the debt. And then he continues in verse 6, and again, this whole concept of the borrower being under on the bottom and the lender being the master, he says, for the Lord your God will bless you just as he promised you. This is verse 6, chapter Deuteronomy 15. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. You shall reign over many nations, but they shall not reign over you. I think that this verse is clearly saying that during this time, at least during this time, during the time of the nation of Israel, God did not want his children to be in debt for extended, long periods of time. Can y'all see that? Is that what he's saying? To the children of Israel, you are to forgive each other's debts after 7 years. I don't want you in debt for a long time. I want it forgiven. Can everybody see that? Are we in agreement on that? The question for us is that, does that still apply for us today? And before we comment on that, I want to add a few more things. You know, this whole idea of being in debt for a long time, does that still apply to us today? And that's where we're getting into the sheet for this week. And we're going to go back and forth, like I said. So, does that apply for us today? Does God still want us, does God still have that desire for his children to be in debt for, if you are in debt, to be in debt for a limited amount of time, not forever? You know, because in our culture, we have the idea that we're just going to be in debt. You go in debt for everything, you just be in debt for a long time. But is that God, what God desires? Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 15 real quick. Everybody turn to Deuteronomy 15. We're going to look at this little passage again. This is where I was just reading from, verses 1 through 6, we're talking about. And also, in that sabbatical year, in the Sabbath year, we talked about last week how the servants were to be released. After 7 years, your debts were to be forgiven. And if you were a servant to somebody because of the debt that you have, you were to be released as a servant. No longer their servant. No longer their slave. And in verse 15, well, verse 12 is where he talks about, you know, if you're a servant, you're to be released. And then he goes in verse 15, follow along with me. He says, you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this today, saying the reason I'm commanding you these things, to forgive, to release your slaves, to forgive them the debts, is because you were a slave in Egypt, and I want you to remember that, and I redeemed you from Egypt. Let's flip back to Leviticus chapter 25. Keep that in mind, what he's saying about releasing them from Egypt. And we're going to look at Leviticus chapter 25. And this is talking about I don't want to go into too much detail because I don't think we have enough time for it, but it's talking about the year of Jubilee. They had what was called the year of Jubilee. And if you have some time and you're interested in looking at this, I would recommend that you read the whole chapter, Leviticus chapter 25, because there's some interesting things that happened that was supposed to happen during this year of Jubilee. But at the end of chapter 25, he goes through for several verses, and he's talking about, again, how they're, starting in verse 47, if you're a slave, that you are to be released. Okay? And there are some more, there's some details about that too. But it's the whole concept again. If you're a servant, then this year of Jubilee, you are to be released, just like in the Sabbath year. Now, what this year of Jubilee was, you know, you had the Sabbath year. So every 7 years, you were forgiven your debts, you were forgiven your, if you were a servant, you would be released. Then this year of Jubilee was every 7 Sabbaths. Y'all probably already know this. I didn't know this until I was studying for it. But every 7 Sabbaths, you were, so every 49 years, on the 7th month is when it started, and it lasted through the whole 50th year. So every 50 years, essentially, there was this year of Jubilee. And at the end, in verses 54 and 55, it's talking about releasing the servants again. 54 and 55. And if he is not redeemed in these years, then he shall be released in the year of Jubilee, he and his children with him. This is the servant. For the children of Israel are servants to who? God. To God. God says, they are servants to me. They are my servants whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Similar to what he said in Deuteronomy chapter 15. He says, I want you to remember, I brought you out of the land of Egypt. I redeemed you from Egypt. You're not to be servants forever to these other people. I want you to be released because you're my servants. You are servants to me. I am Lord your God. You are my servants. Not to other people, but to me. Now, does that still apply to us today? The children of Israel were servants of God. Right? They were to be servants of God. They were to be released from their debt. They were to be released from being servants and slaves because God says, you're my servants. You're to be my servants. Well, absolutely that applies to us today. We're still God's servants. Christ implored us to be servants. Jesus was a servant himself. In Mark chapter 10, verse 45, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. And then we know the story about how he washed the disciples' feet. And after he washed the disciples' feet, you know, displaying an act of servant, of being a servant, he said in John 13, verse 15, I am giving you an example that you should also be a servant, just like I'm being a servant to you. You guys follow my example, talking to his apostles. So God wants us to serve him. And we're told throughout the entire New Testament as well that we're to be servants. John chapter 12, verse 26, if anyone serves me, let him follow me. And where I am, there my servant will be also. If anyone serves me, him my Father will honor. God. Jesus says, if we serve Christ, if we serve him, God will honor us. Hebrews chapter 6, verse 10, for God is not unjust so as to overlook your work and the love you have shown for his name in serving the saints, as you still do. We show love to the saints, or otherwise known as fellow Christians. We show love by being a servant. And that's just a couple verses. We all know that throughout the whole New Testament, we're told that we're to be servants. And again, it comes down to the question, how can we be free, really free, to serve God if we're spending so much of our time and effort serving the ones that we owe money to? You have any thoughts on that? On that whole, the whole idea of being released from their debts, being released from being servants because God wanted them to be servants for Him, and how we're called to be servants as well.
I think when I hear people, myself included, talking about getting out of debt, it's so that we can make future plans to save money. When I finally have debt, then we can upgrade our house. Then we can do this. Then we can go on this vacation. You know, it's never like we think about just being out of debt and just being done. It's always for future things that we'd like to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the motivation should be, how much more can I do for the Lord if I don't have that money going somewhere else?
Mm-hmm.
Really, that should be our motivation. But is it?
Yeah. I'm thinking of a parallel between the children of Israel, who we call that, and Christians. Okay, because the laws that you've been reading there, he said, for instance, you lend the money, not expecting interest on it, to your fellow Jew. And I think the same thing, that same principle would apply to now, though. And the way that we look at our brothers and sisters in Christ, because he said you can lend the money to someone who's a farmer and charge interest. Well, we could do the same as far as that's concerned. Another thing, it's just a principle. Another thing I'm thinking of is the Lord's Prayer, where you ask forgiveness for your sins as you forgive others. It's a give and take there. I'm also thinking that he probably doesn't want you in debt at all, if that were possible.
Because that would be the ideal.
If I'm lending money to someone, and I know next year is going to be that seventh year, I'm probably not going to lend that money, because I got to wipe the debt out. So that would kind of give you the idea that I better think about lending the money to begin with. And, of course, on the other hand, I'm sure he wants the money. I don't think that you can totally do that. We talked about that some. I mean, if I need a car, I don't have the money to go out and just buy a car. I've got to make a loan. Of course, that's like 4 years, 5 years, whatever, something like that. So that's a short period of time. If I buy a home, then it's usually 20 years, 30 years, could be 15 years. There's still an end. If you buy a home, let's say for $60,000, it's going to cost you $180,000 because the interest on that's going to be twice.
Right.
So, and you're not able to use that money. If you can keep from using the credit cards, then you've got more money to spend. I mean, that's just logic, because the banks aren't giving you that money.
Mm-hmm.
For nothing. I mean, if you go to Sears and get a credit card, you can get a credit card with Sears. You get the credit card with a bank. That's just the way it works. But I think that there's a parallel between the children of Israel and the Christians as far as we should look at debt.
I think we can look at, and like I said last week, we'll look at, if the class wants to go this direction, we can definitely look at home mortgages, you know, and buying cars on credit and that kind of thing. You know, and that's something, you know, there might be disagreement about as far as, especially like buying a car on credit. And I don't want to go into too much on this, but especially today because we have other stuff. But, you know, if we say, well, I don't have the money to go buy a car and it's only a 4-year loan or 5-year loan, then I'll buy it on credit. And then after 4 or 5 years, that car, maybe 6 years, you have it for a year without debt. And then you're like, well, I need another car. So what do you do? Go buy. I mean, so, yeah, that one is a four or five-year term. But then you just continually have a new car after a new car or whatever. And you're not only in the car debt for only 4 or 5 years. You're in that for majority of your adult life because you don't have just one car throughout the whole time. And I mean... Yeah.
I Well, and I think there's things too that, you know, it's just as we're sitting here and he was saying what he was saying, you know, I sit here and think about school loans. You know, school loans are not something that, you know, you're looking at $80,000 if somebody, with what college costs, if you go to a particular school and you start and you go through and get a master's and you go on through and you look, and we're not teaching our kids, you know, to, well, you could actually get a job. Mm-hmm. You could actually pay, you know, an hour or two towards, you know, this or that. We don't even teach them that anymore. It's just go take out a loan.
Mm-hmm.
Go take out, you know, and if you're going to be a doctor, well, I'll help you. You know, of course, you know, that's normal. You're going to owe a couple, $200,000 or $300,000.
Well, it's not just take out a loan for the education. I know a lot of students that I went to school with were using that money for, new clothes,
and
cars, and now it wasn't just their tuition.
Absolutely.
That they were using that money.
I think they'll get it.
Right. I mean, that's the whole mindset. I mean, once you realize that I can get something right now for nothing,
mm-hmm.
and the payment is later,
mm-hmm.
then you don't think about it. I mean, there's studies that show that we spend 15% more when we're using a credit card than if we were paying cash. We automatically upgrade because it's so easy. You know, if you would say, this is the amount I'm going to spend, it doesn't matter where the money comes from. If you budget ahead of time and say, I know this is all I have, this is all I can afford, and stick to that, the method of payment shouldn't make much difference. But as long as you do that, you calculate the cost of the interest in what you're paying, then you have to buy something cheaper to offset what you're paying in interest. Then you start to think, wait a minute, why am I buying something at mall prices at Dollar General? Because that's what you're doing. I mean, we look at a house and say, oh, it's $100,000. No, it's not. It's $400,000. Mm-hmm. By the time you're done, it's $400,000.
Yeah.
20 years worth of interest, that's what you end up paying. Three to four times what you think you're paying for the house. Cars are the same way.
But then the thing about cars is that houses
normally appreciate.
Normally appreciate, or at least stay, you know, some markets go down, and like right now it's hard. Cars, you buy a new car, like a rock.
Well,
you know, that's where Chevy gets it from.
The cost of the vehicle just dropped like a rock.
Yeah, the other difference that I see with a house, too, though, is because this was one of the things when we were really starting to make a decision on a house, I'm sitting here looking at, I'm paying $700 a month to live in some place. I'm a slave to somebody, and I'm not getting anything out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas... we ended up for about $100 more a month. Yes, we're in debt, but eventually that debt's going to lead
to building equity and
to something. Whereas I was thinking, you know, I can live in this apartment for 75 years, and at the end of it, they're going to be like, thanks for living here for 75 years. You helped us out.
Yeah,
you know. So I think that's a difference too. Sometimes you have to look at what your end goal is and what your alternative is, because that's where we were at. We're like, okay, it's either rent and maybe save $100 a month. You know, there's a difference. Or can we afford? Is it something that we can do that we can go ahead and start building?
I definitely agree. I mean, as long as you are being sensible in the amount, that you're purchasing, as far as a home goes, the bank will approve you for a lot more than you can afford. And I think that's the trouble we've gotten into in the last several years.
Decades. They expect you to pay 25% of your total income for a house.
Right. And you know,
that's
there's
what they'll approve you for.
Say what?
That's what they'll approve you for.
They'll approve you for more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now? Yeah. Oh, it's been a while since I bought a house.
Yeah. that's a good guy. I mean, that.
Yeah.
They'll approve you
that
for.
That tells you how long it's been since I've been
way
in a house.
Yeah.
So,
it all goes back to that contentment.
Yes,
thing.
Exactly.
I mean, do you really need a $40,000 car? No. I mean, there's ways to manage your money more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And do you need a $300,000 home?
Mm-hmm.
You have to really look at what you're spending your money on. And if too many people live paycheck to paycheck, too many people are stretching themselves so thin that they are that slave. They're not just a servant. They are a slave because every penny counts. And I know that when you're first out on your own, I know I had a lot of issue even just renting an apartment or whatever. I mean, because things cost so much in the economy we live in. And but as you grow, if you're continuing to make smarter choices, it should get easier and easier and easier, because your level of need should not increase exponentially like some people are spending their money. You know, some people will, I've got to upgrade my house just because it's been 10 years since I've upgraded my house or whatever, you know.
I run into that all
the
time.
Gotta redo this part of the house, redo that part of the house, and it falls on that contentment. Is it a need or is it a want?
Absolutely. And that is actually one of the questions, you know, on the sheet from last week. That's one of the questions that we, you know, where's the sheet from last week? That one of the questions we should ask ourselves if we're thinking about going into debt, you know, first of all, ask yourself, am I even going to do it? You know, Smith and I, we've decided no. In our house, we will not have debt. That is 100%. I mean, unless things are just whatever, but no. We are paying on our house right now, and once our house is paid off, we're done. Never. That's what we've decided. That's what I've determined that God wants for me. Wants for us, but wants for me.
I mean, if you look back at the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus talks about, he says, don't lay up for yourself treasures here on earth where moth and rust doth corrupt, but lay them. And what's the next topic? Worry. You don't think those two go hand in hand? The more treasures you try and lay up here, the more worry you have. You know, because I think he put those two together on purpose. And he says, look at the bird. They don't worry about a thing. They have everything they need. They don't worry about anything. God takes care of them. How much more will he take care of you? And yet we think, oh, I've got to do this, and I've got to do this, and I've got to plan. Yeah, you do. But you got to remember, I can't do anything. If the Lord's willing, then I'm going to have this. If he doesn't want me to have it, then I don't need it. But we forget that part. Because he definitely said, don't put your treasures here.
I want to come back to that thought you just had. I want to cover the questions, but
go ahead.
Oh, if we have time, I want to get to that.
We never have time.
The questions were, if y'all want to just jot these down real quick, all had to do with our foundation that we set the first several weeks. First, am I seeking God's will? Am I seeking God's counsel and doing what he wants me to do with this money? These are things we need to ask ourselves, because God, again, like we talked about last week, does not necessarily forbid debt. He doesn't forbid you to go and get a loan. So if we're going to get debt, we need to ask ourselves these questions. Am I seeking God's will? Second thing, like Betsy said, am I showing contentment by buying this thing on debt? Am I showing contentment in that? The third question is stewardship. As a steward of, as a manager of what God has given, is going into debt to buy this really the best thing to do? Is this the best course of action? Is this the best way to use the money that God has given me? God's money. Is this the best way to use God's money? Anyway, I would definitely ask those questions before you think about taking on debt.
I do want to say, though, that number one is most important.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just money, too. And I agree with a lot of these things, but then sometimes I think we can also make money the priority in getting out of debt, putting too much emphasis on money. Mm-hmm. And where I'm going with this is, like, I didn't grow up in the Bible Belt, and I know where I would have been if I didn't go to Harding. You know, I would have, if I'd gone to a state school, I would have been drinking and promiscuous and living the lifestyle. It was better for me to go into debt, you know. And I could have gotten out cheaper, but sometimes it's about God's will and not necessarily money.
Well, that's what I was saying with, like, the school loan and things like that, you know. sometimes, but when you sit down and you do these steps and you think it through, now it's not even being taught to think through. You know, what could you do to offset that? Take out a loan and work at the same time. Maybe you won't be paying back $80,000. You know, maybe, you know, maybe you'll be paying back 20 instead of that.
Mm-hmm.
But and that's kind of where my mindset, where I know what I've got to change in here, is to sit down and actually plan through, you know, what's going to be done before I actually go by. You know, I thought I was a pretty spiritual, godly, decent person. But when you look at the money end of it, that's where you know, you struggle, because you feel like the world's told you that this is normal. It's normal. Mm-hmm. It's okay. We're gonna go to our grave with debt. My parents didn't. I don't know where I got that idea, but we get told those type things. But the whole, you know, it's accepted. It's totally accepted. And generally, our people sitting next to us in church are the exact same way. So, you know.
And
I was gonna say basically the same thing. It's that everybody in this room is in a different place in their life with different amounts of debt and with different amount, because that's the lifestyle that we were trained to live. That's what we were told that we needed to do. But it's a radical change to think we can live without debt. And so it's going to take time. Different people in this room, it's going to take different amounts of time for them to arrive at that place in their life. First of all, to come to the conclusion that that's what they want to do, and second of all, to get there. It may take years in your life to get to that point where you're debt-free. But the point is, like Betsy was saying, do I really need that $40,000 car, or can I do with a $15,000 used car that I can pay off faster? I may have to have a $5,000 used car that I can pay off faster, and once it's paid off, keep it, just continue to maintain it. Am I going to be content doing that so that I can do the other things in my life? And it's a matter of making those choices now and then working towards this, because the Christian life is a lifelong thing. In every aspect of our life, it takes a lifetime, and then we're still not perfect. Never will be. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, sometimes when you sit and listen to other people, you get the impression that, you know, this person's life is perfect. Well, no, everybody is in a different place in their Christian life, and they're looking at different, they're in different places in their Christian life, and their finances is the same as any other part of their Christian life. So it may take one person many years to get out of that. It may take another person not so long, but point is being content with what God has given us, and then working towards not being a slave.
Yeah, I think, and thank you for pointing that out. I'm glad you pointed that out. I think it's also important that that we're working that direction. You know, God doesn't want us to be slaves for so long. You know, and so it might take some people. Longer than others to get out of that, but I think God wants us to work that direction.
Chris, I was thinking about the concept of slavery where you were talking about God doesn't want us to be slaves. And I was thinking about, you know, everything that God, all of his laws, everything that he told us, everything that he tells us to do is for our own good. Because he knows that if we're slaves or servants to him, that he loves us ultimately, is going to give us the best blessings, is going to take care of us. But if we're slaves to anything else, it's going to be destructive. Anything else other than God, if we make it on the throne in our lives, it's going to be destructive for us.
Can't serve two masters.
Right, because God is the only perfect God, the only one that's going to love us unconditionally and bless us. Like, you know, he wants to give us good things, and anything else is going to be destructive for us. And so I was thinking, like, God knows whatever it is that we put on the throne. And if it is money, because we're in so much debt, it's going to lead to destructive things. I mean, you think about people who end up gambling, they end up losing their families, they end up in adulterous relationships, or there's so many things that it can lead to, because your mindset is so focused on, I've got to get out of this debt, I've got to pay this debt, I can't lose my job, I can't, whatever. It's so focused on whatever that is that you put on the throne, in this case, money. And I think that's what God's telling us. This is not a healthy lifestyle for you. It's going to be destructive.
This is what it's doing to you.
Right. And so that's an easier way to look at it for me, is that, you know, it's not that God doesn't want me to have whatever it is that I want to have. It's that he doesn't want it to destroy me. He wants me to ultimately have him on the throne, because that's going to be what's best for me. Mm-hmm. Instead of whatever it is that I'm trying to put on the throne in his place. And so anything that monopolizes our heart, soul, mind, and strength, which money can if we're in extreme debt. You think about, you're spending your time thinking about it. You're spending your heart worrying about it. You're spending your strength working to pay it off. I mean, that's the heart, soul, mind, and strength that we should be giving to God. And so it's just another thing that we can put on the throne. That's what I was thinking about.
Absolutely. And we think about that. If we take into account all those different aspects of our lives that we're putting in order to pay the debts that we owe, I was asking Sam, I was like, if we were to actually take a percentage, let's say, you know, our percentage of income, let's say, versus our percentage of, take our income and then add up all our debts and however much, you know, our debts take up of our total income, but also, you know, that's money-wise, but then also all these other things that you're talking about, all the stress and what it adds to your life and all the worry that you have along with it, I mean, that much of our time and effort and it is being put toward the debt that we can't fully serve God if this much is being used for the debt or toward financial obligations and strains. So I think we are out of time, and I really wanted to get to what Rich touched on a few minutes ago. Yeah, we have next week. So, anyway, thank you everybody for your comments.
Good Lord,
and hopefully,
yeah. Good Lord, well, we have next week.
That's right. So,
and if not, we'll be in a better place.
That's right. I want to worry about that.
That's the one debt you ain't brought up.
It's a debt that we can't pay ourselves, but has already been paid for us. We talked about it. We touched on it last week, but we didn't.